How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 139 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder. You can subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page as well, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. It's going to be a little bit of a different week this week, just because they play the Warriors on Saturday. They play the Cavs on Thursday, and I'm going to be podcasting. I don't know if I'm going to podcast directly after that Cavs game or not. And the reason why is because I actually am going to do a special podcast Friday for Saturday morning, just on the Warriors, just on Kevin Durant, because that's his big return to OKC. So I'm going to do a whole podcast on that. The Thunder won tonight, or this afternoon, I should say, 105-99. Russell Westbrook, 42 points. Robertson, 14-11. Steven Adams, 9 offensive boards. But way more important than any results, way more important than the fact that we just watched like the greatest football game of all time, I have a massive local Oklahoma City celebrity on the line for like the 9th time or whatever it is. John Hamm, how you doing?
All that matters to me is I've now been on more than Royce.
That's true. Royce, and you've been on more than Jerry.
And yeah, definitely more than Jerry. And so the fact that I'm on tonight, this is the sort of comeback like New England pulled off against Atlanta earlier tonight.
Was that the best football game you've ever watched?
Oh my gosh. That was incredible. And I feel so bad for all the snarky stuff I tweeted in the first half.
that was unbelievable. Just like as a Jets fan, that was so heartbreaking. As a Jets Yankees fan, just knowing that Pats and Red Sox fans are just ecstatic around the globe, that just kills me.
Yeah. And like I didn't have a team in this battle. You know, I was just agnostic, sitting back watching a football game because I enjoy the sport of football and I enjoy competitive football games. And I thought, you know, at halftime this was basically done. We were just gonna be just kind of riding it out the rest of the way. And man, I hate to be hyperbolic and I hate to like, you know, have that recency bias and say this is the greatest football game I've ever seen, but it's definitely in the conversation.
You know what? I do not cover football. I don't need to be level-headed or intelligent at all with my analysis. I don't need to be aware of recency bias. Uh-huh. I don't need to be aware of the fact that I don't know enough to classify what is or isn't the best game, and I'm going to call it the best game. So screw all the logic. I'm going to say it's the best game.
Screw amazing. Logic.
Yeah.
That's the 2017 motto. Screw logic.
Logic is fake news these days.
That's right. We don't need you stinging logic.
Yeah. Who needs logic? Who needs facts? We don't even need alternative facts are so last week. We don't even need alternative facts anymore. Those are too true.
That's right.
We need just total and utter chaos. And that game was, I mean, that was amazing.
It was incredible.
The Edelman catch honestly might have been the, like, context included, honestly might have been, because, like, the David Tyree catch is the best catch until tonight. The David Tyree catch was the best catch of any game that I've ever been watching live. That was the best catch that I've seen.
And here's the thing.
That Edelman catch, though, was the craziest.
Okay, so you have the Edelman catch, which we all agree was probably coming into tonight like the greatest catch in Super Bowl history. There were two catches tonight that topped that. Because Julio Jones.
That was insane. He's unbelievable, man. He's incredible.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so anytime you have a single football game for all the marbles, that have two catches like that and the first overtime game in Super Bowl history. Incredible.
Yeah. Julio Jones is something else. He's absolutely unreal. Absolutely unbelievable.
He probably had a triple double tonight, to be honest. I haven't checked the stats.
Did he have a triple double? He's 24 behind Russell Westbrook now. I'll make the transition because I know all of you guys come to us for this incredibly generic football analysis.
Right.
But we're going to let everyone down. We're going to talk about the Thunder instead. Let's talk about the guy who's got 25 triple doubles. He didn't have one this afternoon. The Thunder played at 2 a.m. would be crazy. At 2 p.m. 2 a.m. somewhere. They played at 2 a.m. in China. 105-99. They won, and Westbrook had 42 points, 4 boards, and 8 assists in this game. 19 points in the fourth quarter, second straight game he scored 19 points just in the fourth quarter. He had 19 against Memphis in that win on Friday. He's something else. He's Julio Jones-like, right?
He's off the charts. I mean, this was on the heels of that, you know, single human 15-0 run versus Memphis to close out that game. And then tonight, like you said, what was great, I thought, about this game is the fact that, you know, like Oladipo, you know, pretty much kind of, I wouldn't say carried the team, but obviously he had, you know, a lot of opportunities early in the game. You know, Westbrook was just kind of like, you know, just kind of watching the game, how is this unfolding? And then, you know, in the fourth quarter, it's just like a switch flipped in his brain. And, you know, he, like Reggie Jackson in The Naked Gun, I Must Kill the Queen, and just suddenly just goes on this tear that was incredible.
Way to say topical.
Well, you know, look, with me, any Zucker Brothers films are going to be a topic of conversation. Farrelly Brothers probably as well. So they shaped a lot of my humor.
Well, now that you're talking like that genre movie, I'm trying to see if I can work like a Laverne, like a Joffrey Laverne and Shirley, Don't Call Me Shirley reference from Airplane.
Please,
but I don't. That might be one degree too far. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get there. What was interesting about Russ was that he kind of changed the way he was playing in that fourth quarter. He started using ball screens to get those pull-up jumpers, and he was getting hot, and he was really using the glass. He was that bank shot was kind of on all night, but he was really slicing them with mid-range jumpers, and it was very different from the way that he did. And there were a lot of free throws involved there too. It was different than what he did in Memphis, which is kind of. The Memphis blow-up, which was 15 points in the last 2 minutes and 35 seconds, which was just, I mean, it looked more incredible because it was just two improbable pull-up threes from, you know, 4 feet behind the three-point line. It was him, you know, working a three and getting fouled, like, you know, on one of his, you know, just, you know, one of those plays where he flails, like, you know, he just got destroyed. Mm-hmm. It was two incredible layups where we just saw his unbelievable burst getting to the basket. It was that steal, which he intercepted. You know, it was a lot of plays where you just said, oh my God, how do you do that? And this one was more methodical. It was more, he works a screen from Steven Adams. He goes to the right elbow and he hits his 15-footer. It was more Chris Paul-like. You know, he's not Chris Paul. He's nothing like Chris Paul. Chris Paul is tremendous. They're both great players. They couldn't go about it. It shows very much there's not one right way to do something, right? Like, they couldn't do it more differently. But this was more Chris Paul-like than your normal Russell Westbrook fourth-quarter outburst.
Yeah, and to me, it just, you know, last game and this game, I mean, it was just sort of like Russell Westbrook said, I'm tired of losing. We are not going to lose this basketball game, especially coming off that three-game slide where the Thunder played atrocious. There's no other way around it. I think Billy Donovan would probably say that as well. So what's interesting to me is, so on Friday, I was filling in and doing a spot from 3 to 6 on the franchise, and John Hoover, who's one of the hosts in Tulsa, called in, and what he said was basically someone had told him, you know, they're trying to fix this. They are driven to fix that three-game slide and everything that was wrong. Victor Oladipo and Jeremy Grant were supposed to be at a function in Tulsa at a furniture store. And they arrived late. And that was probably because, you know, everyone was staying behind, watching film, you know, practicing, whatever they needed to do, because, you know, they knew they were headed in the wrong direction. And, you know, they wanted to right that ship as quickly as possible.
So I want to read you something, because I think this is a great quote from one of my favorite interviews in did you see Evan Turner's post game by any chance?
Yes, I did.
This is a great quote. I'm going to read this for those who may not have seen this. Evan Turner is one of the best interviews in the league. I didn't get this quote. This was on the quote sheet. I wasn't even in the Blazers locker room, so I can't put in sound. So I'm just going to have to read it. Somebody asked him about Russell Westbrook and the challenges of guarding Russell Westbrook, and here was his answer. He's got such a great screener. Besides him being so athletic, he's got such a great screener in Steven Adams. Adams can screen, and then as the game goes on, he does so much. If you go under, he's going to grab you, or if you're going to move on the screen, and Russell is like the road runner. And then he says he's going to get out there, and he's going to get to his spot, and tonight he did a great job in the fourth. They did a great job as a team. I love that somebody asked him about Westbrook, and he was like, I'm going to talk about Steven Adams' screening instead.
Mm-hmm.
And Adams had a really good game. I think he only had like 7 points, and he struggled to finish around the rim. He was 3-for-11 from the field. He got blocked a few times. They missed about 400 layups.
Yeah.
But he missed 16 layups in the first half, which is on plays that NBA.com classified as layups, which is just crazy. But Adams missed a bunch of them. He played a really good defensive game. He was great in the pick and roll. He kept guys out of the lane. He had a few awesome verticality plays. He had 9 offensive rebounds. He screened like crazy. Like, so I talk about how Russ was able to get those mid-range shots. That's partly because Steven Adams is there just opening him up for those screens. He's so good on those screens. Like, you guys, when you're on Down to Dunk, like you've talked about, like how Steven Adams needs to get more screen assists. Like, he's got to be more involved in that. And, like, he's a great screen setter. And he's especially great as a flat screen setter when he comes up behind a guy and then is able to decide, when, depending on which way Westbrook goes, he's still able to get in that angle. And I thought he just did a great job doing, you know, it's a cliche, but all the little things in this game.
And this should be a lesson to people out there that, you know, are tinkering with the trade machine or thinking about ways to improve this Thunder team. And not saying Steven Adams is completely untradeable, but, you know, this is a guy whose value doesn't always reflect necessarily in the stat sheet for everything you just mentioned right there. Any player of Adams caliber that can make life easier for Russell Westbrook is worth keeping.
Would you rather have Steven Adams or Hassan Whiteside?
No doubt Steven Adams.
Yeah,
and that's not
you.
A knock against Hassan Whiteside. That's not saying in necessarily that Steven Adams is a better overall player. I understand what Whiteside does, but for what Adams does for his basketball team and for this basketball team, yeah, give me him.
All right, let's get to the main event. Andre Roberson. Andre Roberson won off his career high, 11 boards, 8 rebounds in the first quarter. He had what he said it was the best dunk that he's had since college. He had some cuts. He played the 4. He played a really strong defensive game, I thought, because he was guarding Lillard. He was guarding McCollum. He was guarding Allen Crabbe. He was chasing guys off screens. He was guarding the ball. He did a great job in the fourth quarter. Look, Lillard put up shots in the fourth, but I thought he did a great job on many possessions, just keeping the ball away from Lillard off the ball. He did a really, really great job off the ball, sticking with him and just deterring Portland from getting him the ball. And I think that had a decent amount to do with Portland struggling offensively in the second half of the game, or in the fourth quarter of the game. I thought that was a pretty big impact in terms of that. And you know what? Oladipo did a good job chasing McCollum off screens and that kind of stuff too. I thought he did a really strong job on that as well defensively. What did you think of the way that they defended on the perimeter in this game? Because I thought it was, from a team perspective, one of their, I mean, I don't know if it's their best. I'd have to go through and really think about it. But I thought it was one of their better jobs against a team that can at least, at very least, they put up threes and they're a pretty good offense.
Well, again, you look at that Portland team with Lillard, McCollum, Alan Crabb off the bench. You know, Evan Turner, you mentioned, is kind of the, you know, offensive facilitator type role from that small forward position. Yeah, I mean, I thought they did an absolutely great job, you know, throughout the entire game defensively. And the thing offensively with Robertson now, I mean, correct me if I'm seeing this wrong, but I'm flashing back to the playoffs last season against Golden State when Billy Donovan essentially flipped Andre Robertson and Serge Ibaka and kind of made Robertson the pseudo power forward and Ibaka kind of the shooting guard offensively. Is that happening now? I mean, is that what I'm seeing the past couple of games where Robertson not necessarily is getting involved in screening so much, but is being more active, not just parked in the corner. And like I've seen Sabonis kind of in the corner more than Robertson while Robertson moves off the ball.
Yeah, I think that is happening a little bit more. We've seen him basket cut more. You know, one thing that I would love to see them do more often, which I've done a couple of times, they don't set a lot of off-ball screens. I know Vantage tracks this stuff. Obviously, the teams internally track this stuff, but it's not public data. I would love to see where the Thunder rank in terms of off-ball screens, just the sheer number of off-ball screens that they set compared to other teams. Because I'm willing to bet that it's like all the way down at the bottom of the league.
Yeah.
They set very, very few off-ball screens. They rarely run guys off pin downs. And like something that I asked Billy Donovan before the game, actually, I asked him, now Alex Abrines was available in this game, and Billy Donovan said in his pregame press conference he was available, and I thought he was going to play. I thought he was going to take the minutes that Anthony Morrow ended up getting, and Abrines didn't even get in the game. It was just a DMP CD. It was not an injury thing, and Donovan clarified that after the game. Like, it was not an injury thing. It was a DMP CD. That was why he didn't play, according to Billy. And I thought pregame, I was wondering, like, okay, so now that Cantor's out, how does this affect things with the second unit? So I asked Billy if, now that they're not necessarily running their second unit through a big, they got to run it through the guards because they got to run through Cam and Oladipo, how that affects the way that they use Abrines. So you're more prone now to run him off pin downs and run him off other types of screens, set up flare screens to try to get him actions, because that'll work better when you're running through a guard as opposed to through a big. And Billy talked about like how his positioning will have to be different without Cantor. Now, he didn't specifically talk about setting more screens and, you know, off-ball screens and different types of screens and that kind of stuff. But he did talk about how Abrines' positioning is going to have to change. And he did say, he said positioning on the floor was what he was talking about. With Cantor out, now he ended up playing Morrow anyway, which I thought was a curious decision. I was surprised by that because Abrines has been playing well before he had those back spasms. Like, he's shooting 47% over the last month and a half from three, which is incredibly impressive. But I wonder, like, if, you know, if Robertson is that guy, you want setting those screens. Because if nobody is guarding him, him setting a pin down on a dangerous shooter can be a really valuable thing. Because if nobody is guarding him, then that one guy has to decide, oh no, am I going to end up giving up a layup to Robertson, or I have to chase out to this guy who's a really good three-point shooter on the wing. And that's a tough decision for somebody to make in the moment. And it's tough considering that they're not going to game plan for it because they never do it. So I wonder exactly how they're going to go about this kind of stuff now with Robertson. And he's playing more small ball four. He's done it the last few games with Cantor out because they need another big. And they didn't play Jeremy Grant very many minutes in this one. I thought he struggled defensively a little bit. But I wonder exactly how that's going to affect Robertson's screening and how the effect that Robertson's off-ball screening would have on the rest of the team too.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, I felt like Abrines was really, he kind of found some chemistry with Cantor on that second unit. And there's probably some stats to show where, you know, how many shots that Abrines got as a result of Cantor's double teams and Cantor's passing. And, you know, this is part of the adjustment that has to happen because of the injury to Enes Kanter. It's not just a matter of, okay, well, we'll just run everything through Joffre Lauvergne now. No, not at all. And this is what I think is kind of remarkable about Billy Donovan is, think back to earlier this season, Victor Oladipo gets injured, misses 9 games, but it took a couple of games for Billy Donovan to kind of say, oh, okay, this is what we need to do now. And we're kind of seeing that again now that Enes Kanter is out. I think you have to give a lot of credit to Billy Donovan and the coaching staff for figuring out these changes they need to make, you know, to get by and how they could pay off whenever Kanter returns.
Helps when you make shots too.
That definitely does.
Things look good. Because, like, okay, we haven't really talked about Oladipo. Like, Oladipo did a – he caught fire because they – the bench unit got hurt that first time they were playing in that end of the first quarter into the start of the second quarter unit. Like, that unit got hurt. And then they went out in the end of the third quarter and into the fourth. Russ left the game. I think the game was tied when Westbrook left the game. And the Thunder were up 5, 6, 7 points when he came back in. And it was in part because Oladipo just got really hot. He was hitting those long pull-ups, and he found LaVerne for a three, and those were on three straight possessions. It looked like there were three threes, but they ended up changing one of those Oladipo threes into a two. But Oladipo, 24 points, 13 boards, 3 assists. One of his better – now, granted, look, Portland is not known for its defense. But one of his better offensive performances of the season, just in terms of the way that he ran the second unit.
And, again, 13 boards as well, which is – I forget, is that a career high or ties a career high? But in any event, from the guard position, considering that he's a fairly out-rebounded Russell Westbrook, ought to give you an indication on the way his afternoon went.
Yeah, we'll see how Russell treats him in the next game. if Russell is like shoving him out of the way for rebounds the next game.
Yeah.
Then we'll see. We'll see how that goes over. How that goes over with everybody. I'm wondering, are you worried? I wrote a Sabonis piece. I'll plug it. Why not? It's my damn podcast.
That's right.
I wrote a Sabonis piece that was in this morning's paper. So Sunday morning's paper, and went out online on Saturday. Just about, is this the rookie wall? He's really been struggling. Sabonis in this one was, he played 34 minutes. He was 0 for 6 from the field. He had 6 rebounds, but he was 0 for 6 from the field. He had 2 points, made a couple of free throws. That was it, 0 for 1 from 3. Are you worried about him?
I would like to see him, because some of those shots he missed were right at the basket. I mean, just point blank, and they just, you know, just didn't go in. But the fact that, you know, again, you mentioned the 6 rebounds, he had a couple of block shots tonight. Single game plus minus is misleading, but he was a plus 14. Now, that probably
highest
had a lot
plus minus on the Thunder.
Yeah, had a lot to do with who he was on the floor with at the time. But, you know, obviously he's doing some other things on the court that are being helpful, because we've seen Billy Donovan, what was it, the last game, I think he played 11 minutes.
He's still an above average defender for a rookie.
Yeah. And that has some value for this team right now, and yeah, definitely on certain nights.
Yeah, I think part of it was that this was if Jeremy Grant were playing a good game, like if we were playing a good Jeremy Grant game, then I think we would have seen more of him at the four over Sabonis. But there were some. Look, Donovan also went to Sabonis in some moments where I was like, really, I'm surprised he's doing that right now. Like really late when he was playing with that lineup. The small lineup, so it was Russ, Morrow, Oladipo, Robertson, and Adams. Mm-hmm. And he pulled Adams and put in Sabonis late in the first half. And for that last, like, minute and a half. And I was surprised by that. I was like, oh, why? I mean, Adams has played – he played a lot of minutes on Friday. He played 38 again on Sunday. So he's playing a lot of minutes now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess maybe you want to conserve that extra minute and a half. But just like kind of some of the timing of the Sabonis subs, they're worthy. They at least show like Billy Donovan has confidence in him, because those are the types of subs you don't put in a guy that you don't think is going to at least produce in some facet for those sorts of moments.
Yeah, I agree. So I kind of trust Billy Donovan on this. He's got a pretty good feel, you know, especially game to game and within the game, like what works and what doesn't work. So, you know, I've come to the point to where I don't severely question when he does some things. Like, some things are kind of interesting, you know, whenever he does that. But, you know, obviously something he's kind of figured out here within this game that you know, that worked.
Yeah, and just something to look out for. Like, Steven Adams played 40-some-odd minutes on Friday against Memphis.
44.
44, yeah. He played 38 minutes on Sunday against Portland. Victor Oladipo played 39 minutes on Sunday. Robertson played 36 minutes on Sunday. And then Russell Westbrook played 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Billy has constantly said he prides himself on how he manages Russell's minutes, and Russell does a lot more than everybody else, and he just wants him to make sure that he's fresh, and playing him for 39 minutes, he thinks over a period of time will diminish the quality of his minutes, and he'd rather get, you know, 100% of Russell Westbrook for 35 than, you know, whatever it is from Russell Westbrook for 38. And I completely understand that, and it makes perfect sense to me. But something that I'm going to ask him is, and I don't know if I'll ask him, they're on the road on Monday, second half of back-to-back in Indiana, and I am not traveling, so I won't be able to do it there. They're not practicing Tuesday, so I won't be able to do it until at least Wednesday. We'll see if I remember by Wednesday. But something that I want to ask him at some point is, so you're going out of your way to manage his Russ's minutes, but Adams' minutes are really climbing. We'll see if this continues on Monday. Adams' minutes are climbing like crazy with Kanter out. Oladipo's are climbing like crazy with Kanter out because you're having him run that second unit. Where does it stop with those guys? Now, I know Russ does a lot more, but like Steven Adams is a big man. Conventionally, those guys tend to get less minutes. Like, where does it stop with the minutes management on those guys too? And at what point do you just say, like, all right, if those guys are getting the minutes, I might as well give Russ a couple more also?
And I wonder too if it's not, you know, understanding that there's an all-star break coming up. And, you know, with Kanter being out, that, okay, we can extend these guys. They're going to get, what, an 8-day break?
Nine.
Coming up soon? Nine.
They play on the 15th, and then they don't play again until the 24th.
Right. And that's the point where supposedly Kanter will be reevaluated.
Right. Russ does not get a break, though.
Right. Exactly.
He's gets a break for a few days, but
yeah,
does not get that full break. And nor does Sabonis.
Right. So yeah, because Sabonis has to go play in the is it rookie sophomore now, or is it still Worlds versus US?
It's the Rising Stars Challenge.
Okay,
which is a terrible name because it's a challenge. It's not a challenge. A challenge makes it sound like it's like some sort of like, you know, game show thing. Like it's
right.
It's a game. It's not a. No one's ever called a game a challenge. It's a terrible name. It should be the Rising Stars Game.
And how many of these are actually Rising Stars?
A lot of them, honestly.
I would be curious to go, because I still have like a memory in my head of like Larry Stewart of the Washington, probably Bullets at the time, being on, you know, the rookie at that time was like really good and then fell off the planet. I wonder how many of these guys are actually Rising Stars or just happen to be good in the moment.
Okay, I'm calling up the rosters right now. You tell me if somebody at least classifies as, like, not egregious for this term. Devin Booker, yay or nay?
Okay, yay.
Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
Yes?
Well, okay, let me think about this. Star? No. Okay, I'm going to retreat a little bit. Okay. I think he's going to be a very good NBA player for a long time. Star? Sure. No.
Marquise Chris?
No.
Brandon Ingram?
Too early to call?
Sure. Frank Kaminsky?
No.
Jahlil Okafor?
I'm going to say no.
D'Angelo Russell?
I'm going to say yes.
I agree. So he's number two. Jonathan Simmons? Wish I would have liked to see him in the dunk contest.
Right. No.
Karl Anthony Towns? Yes.
Yes.
Miles Turner? Yes.
Yes.
So that's four right there. Then okay. We get to the world team, which is the better team. Joel Embiid?
Yes.
Dante Exum? No.
I still want to say too early because we're still just, you know, year one after that ACL injury, but probably not a star.
All right. Buddy Hield?
No.
Nikola Jokic is a yes.
Yes.
Trey Lyles is probably a no.
Probably a no.
Moutier is probably a no, but like there are still people really high on him.
Yeah. I'm going to say no at this point.
Jamal Murray's got possibilities.
Yeah.
Kristaps Porzingis, obviously yeah. Already a star. Sabonis and Dario Saric. So that's like double-digit guys.
Yeah, okay. Good point.
Because last year's rookie class was insane.
Yeah.
Last year's rookie class. Think about all the guys in there from last year's rookie class who are just unbelievable. Like Porzingis and Jokic, who was not last year's draft class, but was last year's rookie class. And, you know, I guess Embiid is this year's rookie class, but then you got Miles Turner, got Karl Anthony Towns, you got D'Angelo Russell. Okafor is a good player. Like, there are so many guys. Devin Booker, that rookie class was unbelievable last year.
Yeah, it was. It was really good.
And this year is just hot garbage everywhere.
Pretty much. Thanks, Ben Simmons, for fracturing the foot.
Yeah. Yeah, but at least we got Joel Embiid running his own team in the meantime, which is pretty fun.
That is a lot of fun.
The Sixers are so fun to watch.
Yeah, they are.
They're incredibly – even when Embiid is not playing, that's my hot take. Even when Embiid is not playing, they're fun to watch.
They are. They're not as fun as the Miami Heat.
You mean the 2017 NBA champion Miami Heat.
The 10 games in a row Miami Heat.
They were 11-30.
It's unbelievable.
And I'm actually not being ironic when I say this. They were 11-30, and then Dion Waiters has led them on a 10-game winning streak.
Yeah. And it's not like that they're beating up on teams of their own caliber. They have knocked off Houston. They've locked off, you know, Golden State, for crying out loud, Atlanta.
Dion Waiters is a top three player on that team right now.
Yeah. How crazy is that?
It is crazy. His numbers over this 10-game winning streak are amazing.
He's been held back his entire career. It basically took Eric Spoelstra and a bunch of injuries to say, all right, let's try it.
He's averaging like 22 a game over this time, and he's shooting like 40-some-odd percent from three. And Dion Waiters, man.
That is awesome. I hope he cashes in this summer because he kind of got the screw last summer.
He'll probably cash in.
I hope he does.
He'll probably cash in. He'll get more than he did this past summer, I imagine. Look, a lot of what happened this past summer was because of his reputation.
Sure.
And I think being a year removed from that, he's had no negative press in Miami. He's actually had some positive press from being in Miami, and he had positive press in his last year in Oklahoma City, just in terms of him getting along with the organization and being a good teammate and that kind of stuff. And the stink from Cleveland kind of followed him. And I think that was, I mean, I know that that was a big reason why some teams were like, no, we don't want him. Like, you know, everyone thought that him going to the Nets was good. It was like this really intuitive decision, mm-hmm. or him going to the Kings. The Kings, you know, had something there, but you know, the Nets were just like, didn't want a piece of him because of that. The Nets just, they organizationally thought he did not fit. And even though, like, from a video game perspective, he did. And I think, like, being a year more removed from that, so it's not only 1 year removed, it's 2 years removed, and he can be able to sell, like, hey, I'm 25 now, I'm more mature than I was when I was, like, 22 years old, and, you know, I'm a father, and I'm a changed person. I think that kind of stuff will change his market value. I really do.
And to be fair to the Nets, they twice had Yogi Ferrell under multi-year contracts and let him go. So, you know.
And now he signed a 2-year deal with Dallas.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yep. The Nets have done an okay job under Sean Marks. They're in a pretty impossible. You can't get all the 10-day guys.
This is true.
Like they got, here's the thing. You're gonna, like, that's gonna happen. If you're a team that's just going out and trying to sign a million 10-day guys and seeing what's going on, like, you're going to miss on some of them. If you get one of them, then you did it. And they got their one. They got Sean Kilpatrick.
Yep.
They got Sean Kilpatrick, who is a legitimately useful NBA player. And they got him off the scrap heap. So they got their one to where it's like, all right, they're excusable. Because you can't expect, like, look how many teams had Jeremy Lin. Like, look how many teams had so many. Look how many teams had Hassan Whiteside. Mm-hmm. Like with these 10-day guys, it's so hard to evaluate someone in 10 days.
And situationally, plus if you know, I don't know, give Rick Carlisle just about anything and it's like he'll make it work.
Yeah.
He was Dallas,
another team that's playing way better basketball than it should be.
Yeah, like he was almost making it work with Pierre Jackson.
Yeah.
Who was on a 10-day deal whenever they decided to make the move to Yogi Ferrell. So, I just have so much respect for Carlisle and Spoelstra and how they just kind of take what they're given and make something work out of it.
They are, without question, two of the best coaches in the NBA.
No doubt.
They're both excellent. Anything to plug, Bleacher Report, franchise, anything else before you go?
Nothing else at this point. Hopefully we'll have something coming out on Bleacher Report later this week. I think we're talking a little bit of a trade deadline preview. Kind of diving into, you know, what does Oklahoma City actually have to trade? And not just in terms of what's on the roster right now, but what do they have in terms of player rights? What do they have? What can they deal in terms of future picks? you know, what does that mean for trading at the trade deadline versus the draft? So, you know, maybe that'll be coming along later this week.
Does that mean you're going to be talking about, like, Sophocles Trodonitis?
Yes, because I have been dying to write about Baby Shaq.
Baby Shaq. Final. Baby Shaq's been traded in more deals. Like, he's been, like, the player to be – the basketball equivalent of the player to be named later many times.
Yes, the – In this day's age of NBA, where there are weird salary cap technicality trades, and one team has to throw in the draft rights to someone to make it work.
When was the last? Who did they acquire him for? What was the deal?
Skorzenidis. They got him in the Tabo Cephalosha trade.
Right, man.
And that was one where like Tabo could have signed with Atlanta outright. But the Thunder got in, negotiated a sign and trade, and Atlanta said, okay, well, we really shouldn't have to give up an asset here. So the Thunder traded the draft rights to somebody. I forgot who it was, along with Tabo and cash, to buy that trade exception from them and got the draft rights to Skorzenidis. And then they used the trade exception later to get Deion Waiters.
And here's a trivia question for you. How did his rights end up in Atlanta?
So he was Skorzenidis was drafted by the Clippers.
Yeah.
I should know this off the top of my head.
Shouldn't know this off the top of your head. If you know this off the top of your head, then I would be so unbelievably impressed.
I am trying to remember.
The only reason I know it is because I used to write about the Clippers.
Right. I'm scanning my brain trying to think of Clippers Hawks trades in the past few years, or somewhere between. What, 03 and 2010?
I'll give you a hint. The guy who was traded for him is he was a 2-year starter for the Clippers.
Was a 2-year starter for the Clippers.
Yep.
I'm thinking. I'm analyzing.
You're not even
going to
think about it because no one thinks of him as a starter.
Because Caron Butler was from Dallas.
No, not Caron Butler.
Was it before Caron Butler?
It was same time. It was same the last time? Last year of Vinny and first year of Doc were the 2 years he was a starter.
Okay.
So like 12, 13, and 13, 14.
I should know this. I'm going to be blown away when you finally tell me.
No, everyone forgets or like doesn't even realize that he was a starter because he was one of those like he starts and then he plays 14 minutes. Should I tell you?
Yes.
He's an assistant coach for Golden State now. Does that help?
I'm trying to think beyond Mike Brown. Who else is on that staff?
Willie Green.
Willie Green.
Willie Green.
Wow. So that was a sign-and-trade deal.
Yes, it was a sign-and-trade deal.
Nice.
It was like an August sign-and-trade deal. And then, fun fact, for all you guys out there trying to impress, or you girls out there trying to impress guys or girls in bars, if you really want to, you can tell them that in the 2012-13 season, Willie Green ended up leading the NBA in right corner three-point percentage. They will be very impressed with how much you know about Willie Green.
I hope that's on his Hall of Flame pack. Hall of Fame plaque.
No, Hall of Flame because he was on fire that season.
He's on fire.
Hall of Flame, baby.
Oh, good stuff.
All right, let's just shut this down. let's end it with the Hall of Flame. John, you're at John N. M. Ham on Twitter. I totally butchered that. Say it so unlike me.
Like everyone at the franchise butchers it too.
I said John N. M. Ham.
And I blame the guy on the H&R Block commercials right now. So yeah, at John J-O-N-M Ham H-A-M-M.
All right. And you can remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com or find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. And log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road, my blog there, to find out what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. I'm going to be back with you tomorrow following the Indiana game, which is in Indiana. I'm not going to be there for it. Which was kind of nice, honestly. I just traveled so much in January, and I could use the break. Again, just a reminder, it's either going to be a 5-episode week or a 6-episode week. I will definitely be doing a podcast for Saturday morning, just previewing the Golden State game. So you can look out for that one. It's just going to be, I'm going to be talking exclusively about Stephen Curry and nobody else on the Golden State roster. And that's going to be it. But until tomorrow night, until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Progressive presents Mindflowness with Flo.
Before you lies a beautiful meadow. In that meadow, Progressive Direct has placed its auto insurance rates alongside those of competitors. You select the lowest rate and feel a great sense of calm. A great sense of...
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates so you can rest easy. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.